everyone, and welcome to the Neurodiverse Teacher Podcast. I am your host, Dr. Kristen Eccleston, aka the Neurodiverse Teacher, and today my guest is Michelle Markman. After feeling lost and without a community, Michelle realized in her early 30s that she might have a disability. 5 years after receiving an autism diagnosis, Michelle started to find similar experiences with other late diagnostic autistic individuals, especially females, and in her words, stepped into her creative, quirky creature that she is and began to cultivate real, authentic relationships with people who accepted her for who she truly is. Today, Michelle works with other late diagnosed autistic adults to spread the empathy and understanding she has gained along her journey in order to help others live a life full of purpose and love. It is Michelle's mission to help neurodiverse individuals create a life they love, appreciate, and are excited to celebrate each day. Well, welcome, Michelle, to the Neurodiverse Teacher Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me on. It's a pleasure to be here, Kristen.
Well, I am excited to kind of talk with you about everything you. So I'm going to jump right in with my first question for you. And that is, tell me the why behind what you do. Give me a little bit of your story and kind of what led you to start working with other individuals who are neurodiverse.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great question. So my why is I want to help people. I've always been passionate about helping others. I've always been passionate about lifting people up and easing suffering. And in my life story, I went through a lot of suffering, a lot of confusion. You know, as a child, I flew under the radar, wasn't diagnosed as autistic. In my early 20s, I was diagnosed with bipolar disorder, which ended up being a completely incorrect diagnosis. And then finally, in my later 20s, was finally diagnosed with autism. So my mission in the world is to help other people avoid having to go through all the suffering that I went through by helping them really step into their power fast, accept who they are, and understand where their strengths lie.
I love that. And you know, it's funny, it sounds like you and I actually have very similar backgrounds, whereas your diagnosis was ASD, mine was ADHD, pretty much around the same time frame. I was 30 years old when I finally got that diagnosis. And it does make a huge difference, right? Do you feel like you had this like, oh my gosh, my life makes so much more sense type of experience?
I did. And, you know, it took me some time because I, like you mentioned in the intro, there were about 5 years where I thought, oh, this is ridiculous. I can't be autistic because there's only, you know, that happens to white boys and men and women can't be autistic. And I have social skills. So this is ridiculous. But once I did finally start to research it and connect with other people who are on the spectrum and other neurodivergent individuals, things started clicking into place. And I started finding that there were so many similarities between my experience and their experience. And, you know, it just kind of was an aha moment.
I have found that too, that especially when I talk with other females who are neurodiverse, that when we start to get into some of the, I hate to say it as trauma, but it is, I mean, traumas yes. and stressors and things that we experience, it's almost like we have lived these parallel lives because it was like, oh, you felt that way about yourself when you were in school. And, oh, you were afraid to speak up. And, oh, you're a people pleaser too. Like it's like we all yeah. have these kind of common experiences. And the funny thing is, not that it's truly funny, but we all were hiding it. We were all working so hard, even if we weren't aware that we had autism or that we had ADHD, like we were still working to hide the fact that we knew that something was different about ourselves.
Yes, absolutely.
And do you feel like, what do you feel like you were, who you were when you were a student in school? Like thinking back on it now, knowing what you know now about your diagnosis, could you tell me a little bit about what did it look like and feel like for you when you were a student in school?
When I was a student, I went to preschool, I went to kindergarten, I went to first grade, and I thought pretty much all of those were lots of fun. I actually had sort of an unusual upbringing. I was unschooled from second to eighth grade. But in high school was when I sort of got a rude awakening that I was different because my entire high school shunned me. So that was when I started realizing that there was something a little bit different about me, but I wasn't sure, you know, what it was at the time. And that's when I really started heavily masking and trying to just hide the person that I am in order to be accepted by other people.
Oh man, I'm really sorry to hear that, because I feel like so many of us went through that. And our biggest thing was trying to work so hard for other people not to recognize that we had things going on. Can you imagine if we had maybe been more open and transparent with each other, that maybe we, a lot more of us would have been able to find connections and be like, you too? Yeah, like I'm feeling that way too, right? Because I feel like there's so many more of us, not only in our age bracket, but girls today too. And I know I'm focusing in on girls by saying that, but I know boys fall into this category too. But so much of the time, we're so afraid of feeling different in any kind of way that we end up almost overly masking and not making those connections with peers, because we are afraid of that. Am I going to seem different in any kind of way?
Right. So absolutely.
Let me ask you, you now have a practice where you are a relationship coach, and I would love for you, please, in detail, tell me about that. What does that look like? What do you do? How do you help individuals?
Yeah, absolutely. So I have a program where I walk my clients through a 3-month process. We start with self-acceptance and self-love. I mean, that's the basis of all relationships, is being able to accept and love yourself. So that is where we start. We also talk about, you know, accepting yourself under this new framework of neurodivergence. It's a lens to look through to see your entire history in a different light. So we talk about that. I help my clients to identify safe people and learn how to form relationships with them, how to avoid people that may be abusive or are unsafe people, and how to learn what is masking for them, how that shows up for them, and how to really use the mask as sort of a unique gift that they can leverage when they need it, and be able to unmask when it's safe for them to do so. Because it's so important for us as neurodivergent individuals to be able to unmask for our mental health. We work on helping you with tools on how to deal with overstimulation, understimulation, relearning how to play, identifying special interests that we may have lost along the way with that people pleasing that you were mentioning earlier. So often we can just lose who we are and what makes us happy. And so getting back in touch with that inner child, getting back in touch with how you play and what's fun to you, and how to get back in touch with really the core of yourself. We help you leverage your strengths and scaffold your weaknesses to harness your unique superpowers. And also we work on self-advocacy. So how to ask for what you need, how to set boundaries, how to enforce those boundaries. And finally, the end of the program is personal branding. So how to create an ideal avatar that you can present to the world that gives you a little bit of safety when you step out into the world. You know, for women, it can be makeup. It can be a specific item of clothing. I'm really big on scarves. I always wear my pearls. So it just, you know, it's just, it can be these little touches that make you feel a little bit safer in the world.
Wow. I love that. That sounds beautiful. Let me ask you, how many adults would you say when you work with them don't have this sense of self? I know that that was something I feel like I woke up one day and realized, this kind of idea of, are these really my interests? Did I pursue the things that I wanted to pursue? Or was it that kind of people pleasing that often comes along with being neurodiverse? And you think that these are your choices, you think that these are your interests, and then one day you wake up and realize, I don't know what I like, or I don't know if this is really me or not. Do you find that that's something that a lot of individuals who are neurodiverse end up having to deal with and kind of go through?
Yeah, it's huge. And honestly, it can happen anywhere along the lifespan. So it tends to happen when a person finds out or self-diagnoses, gets that formal diagnosis that they are neurodivergent. And that's when they really start to realize, I've created this life that's a house of cards. I don't even know what I like to do. I ended up in a job that I hate because someone else told me that's what I should do, you know? So it can happen. That waking up point can happen at any time, or a person can go through their entire lifetime and never really wake up, never really realize that they've been living someone else's life. And I think that's the hardest thing, is to see someone that's gone through their whole life and hasn't had a chance to find out what they really love and what really matters to them.
Do you find that it's kind of hard for people when they first make that realization that, hey, I now have this whole kind of, especially for an adult, right, this whole structured life, and it wasn't anything that I had specifically had interest in or created, but here I am. One, do you feel like that's hard to make that realization? And then two, what kind of success rate do you see for people once they've made that realization and being able to step out into their own and rediscover the things that are actually their interests?
Right. Absolutely. I think it can be hard. You have to really reframe the way that you think about yourself as an individual. You have to reframe what is meaningful to you. You have to start to get back in touch with your own personal feelings, your own personal desires. And a lot of the time, even more so for women, I would say, we lose that. And we're trained through society and culture that we should put everyone else first. So I think especially for women, it can be doubly challenging. But I've had 100% success rate in my programs. So it's possible. And it's probable. And with the right tools, you can find out what you love. And that makes all the difference in the world, to be able to have meaning and have purpose and have things that light you up and are fun and you really enjoy doing again.
I love that. Now, in your programming at all, is it one-on-one? Do you do it in a group in any sense? Is there any way for individuals who are neurodiverse to connect with each other in any type of way?
Yeah, absolutely. So I do one-on-one coaching, but I do also have a Facebook group, which is Neurodivergent Relationship Social /Support Forum. And that's where I have all of the people that are involved in the coaching program or will be involved in the coaching program all meet in a group. They can post questions and get responses from each other or from me. And it's a great way to form and build community.
I love that. And what would you say that community has done for individuals who are neurodiverse? Do you think it's important and impactful to be able to make those connections with people who are kind of going through similar things?
Yeah, absolutely. Because we spend so much of our lives questioning our validity. We're told that our experiences are wrong, that our feelings are wrong, that how we present to the world is wrong. You know, over and over. And to be able to come together with other neurodivergents in a group and talk about your common feelings, your common experiences, and see that there are other people that have been through the same things that you're going through right now, or that you've been through and you've come out on the other side, I think that's priceless.
I love that. I love that. So tell me a little bit about how you first got into deciding that this was your passion. Like, I know you told me a little bit about your backstory and stuff, but like, what made you realize, like, no, like I have gone through this transformation. Now I'm going to help other people go through this transformation. Have you always been a coach? Was there anything that you did prior to being a coach?
That is a great question. I have had so many different jobs and tried so many different things. I definitely consider myself a multi-passionate individual. My first job was an usher at a performing arts theater. I worked in kayak rentals. I worked as a hospital administrator and customer care operations. And coaching is where my heart is. And what makes it most impactful is that I have been where all of my clients are, and I know that there's light at the end of the tunnel, and I know how to get them there, and I have been through it. And just watching that transformation to me is so amazing. So I know that this is my calling and it's what I'm meant to do.
I love that. I love it when individuals who are neurodiverse, especially, like, find that passion, because I think sometimes people don't realize that when people who are neurodiverse find their passion, I mean, you get it all. You get the whole heart, the whole interest, the everything. I mean, even just when you're talking about it, you can see that difference or that light or that spark in the individual. And I can definitely see the light and the spark in you. So tell me, on a day-to-day, what does your typical day entail? or any exciting story you've ever had involved in your work. I know obviously you probably can't tell details specifically about people, but I'd love to have some kind of upbeat lightheartedness of some of the success that you've had in your coaching profession.
Yeah, absolutely. I recently had a client who went through my program, and when she started, she had moved from another city, but even where she was living before, which was on the East Coast, she moved locally to the West Coast. And she just had never really had a sense of community, never had meaningful relationships. And she'd been unemployed. She was looking for a job and a partner. And she had all these goals. And so during our time working together, she was able to meet the love of her life, who she's now engaged to, make friends, become a part of a meaningful community, and find work that has purpose and meaning for her. She has a job now too, and it's a job that she loves. So that's the kind of success story that I love to share. And that's a success story that I want for all of my clients.
Oh man, I love that. That is absolutely amazing and beautiful. So Michelle, tell me a little bit about you too, outside of your work. What are some of your passions and some of your interests that you found? It sounds like you, like many of us who are neurodiverse, have gone through kind of that awakening and trying to rediscover yourself. What are some of the things that you had to kind of rediscover and learn about you?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's been a journey. And what I've found that I really love is a couple of things. Dance is one of them. I've always been a dancer and I love dancing. And that is a way for me to ground myself, to reconnect with my inner goddess and just feel good. So mm-hmm. Dance is one of them. I love the outdoors. I love hiking. I love climbing mountains. I climbed Kilimanjaro in 2017. And I love doing things like that, that put me at the very edge and just a little bit over my comfort zone, sometimes way over my comfort zone, because I feel like that's where I really grow as a human, as an individual. Because you don't really know what you're capable of until you set a challenge that you don't think you can reach and then blow it out of the water. So yeah, definitely the outdoors, dancing, trying new things. And I love traveling, especially internationally, which is not necessarily the norm, I would say. But yeah, those are my favorites, I think.
I love that. And what are some of the challenges that you still feel like? I think everybody as an individual is always working on themselves. I like to think that we're always a work in progress. We're always trying to kind of unearth those deeper things about ourselves, especially if you had past experiences like we had in our youth. What are some of the challenges that you as an individual are still working on? Because I often think it's something that we don't usually put out there for people. You know, we don't usually want to share some of our challenges, but I think it's important mm-hmm. for people to hear that we all have things that we're working on or that we're coping with. And obviously if it's, you don't have to go too far down any rabbit hole. I would never put you on the spot for that. But if it's anything that you are willing to share, I would love for other people to maybe be inspired and know that they're not alone in facing day-to-day challenges.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think probably one of my biggest challenges is time management. And I'm sure that resonates with a lot of the people that are listening or viewing right now. I tend to compensate by being early most of the time, but time management can really be a challenge, especially if you start doing something that you love or you're really passionate about, and then you just lose track of time. And just making, you know, life is a balancing act. I'm a mom, I have a toddler, I'm a wife. You know, I have this coaching business and I'm busy. So finding time for everything, I think that's probably my biggest challenge.
Now, I want to ask you a question, and it's a little bit of a more serious question in the sense that I often talk about neurodiversity along with mental health. And mental health and neurodiversity are not mutually exclusive of one another, but so many mm-hmm. of us who are neurodiverse do struggle at times with mental health needs just because, I mean, let's face it, there's a lot of negativity, especially when we were younger. There's even research studies that show that the age of 10, we've already gotten upwards of 20,000 negative messages given to us because we do see the world a little bit differently. We focus on the world a little bit differently. Has that been something in your life that you have ever had to focus on or overcome or put supports in place for that mental health piece to ensure that you are in a positive mental space on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah, definitely. I have been through a lot. And I would say, especially in the mental health sort of area, mental health was my passion. I got my bachelor's degree in psychology. And that was a lot of searching for, you know, what was wrong with me? Why am I so different? And so I mentioned in the beginning, I was misdiagnosed with bipolar 2 at one point. I've faced depression and anxiety throughout my life. And I think that it's really common for those of us who are neurodivergent to deal with these mental health challenges, all kinds of mental health challenges, because the world that we live in is not set up to support us. And we really have to work to put support in place for ourselves.
Absolutely. You know, you mentioned the misdiagnosis, and I had a similar experience in the sense that I was diagnosed with depression at a time in my life where I was like, I don't think I'm depressed. And it really was probably the ADHD that was coming through. And so there probably is a large population of neurodiverse individuals who do end up with these misdiagnoses. Can you speak to any degree to that, how that was impactful to you in any way, either one, getting that diagnosis, or two, when you realize that, hey, that actually isn't what is actually happening here?
Right. I mean, well, having any kind of diagnosis is going to change the way that you view yourself. So for a period of time, I viewed myself as having bipolar, being bipolar, whatever you want to say. And, you know, it was over the course of years, of a decade, where I ended up getting off the bipolar medications and doing wellness practices to take care of myself. And then after about 9 years, I went through a depression. So went on an antidepressant, and then actually found out after going on the antidepressant that, you know, there's proof in the pudding that I don't have bipolar, because if I did, that would have triggered a manic episode. So it just had been this whole misdiagnosis and this whole misframing of my life.
So thank you for sharing that. And the reason why I asked is when I had the diagnosis of the depression, and then years later is when I found out about the ADHD, I don't want to say I was angry, but there was definitely like this level of frustration that, you know, you would think that things like ASD and ADHD would be in the medical professions, some things that would be more commonly known or aware of. And you're right. When you get a diagnosis, then it's not that you take on the persona, but it definitely becomes a part of you because you're trying to understand who you are as an individual. And that was incredibly impactful to me. Not to say that I haven't dealt with depression. I have, but at that point in my life, I wasn't dealing with depression. And here I was being told I was depressed. Here I was being given medication that was making me feel not myself. And it was because that wasn't truly what I was dealing with. I was dealing with symptoms of that ADHD. And that's why I asked you your view on it, because I think it's important because, again, like I said, I think so many of us get misdiagnosed with things. And it is something that needs to be acknowledged, that it is impactful to us and how we view ourselves. And I had a lot of frustration, and again, not anger, but maybe anger for a lack of better words, that I wasn't identified appropriately. And I think at that point in my life, I was probably 22. And so we're talking even 8 years more before I even got the actual real diagnosis. And that diagnosis, I didn't even go into the doctor for ADHD. I went in for, I think, anxiety. And then they were like, hey, have you ever considered that you might have ADHD? And so do you feel like you had any level of anger, frustration as well that came along with starting to understand, like, wait, that wasn't what I was actually coping with. It was something very different. And, you know, if we had been maybe a little bit more open, especially to females who fall into the neurodiverse category, then it could have been something that could have been identified either earlier, or I could have started to understand myself a little bit more earlier on.
Yeah, absolutely. I resonate with that. And I would say that there is a whole process of accepting this new identity of being neurotypical and mourning the loss of your, I'm sorry, neurodivergent, and mourning the loss of your neurotypical identity that you had. So it's a process that you have to go through. And like you were saying, as far as, you know, getting people the right diagnosis, our whole framework is set up around white males. That's psychology. The DSM-5 was written for diagnosing white males with conditions. So we really have to make changes to get everyone these proper diagnoses that they need to get. The framework has to be changed. There's a lot of emotions and feelings that come up with finding out who you are and why you are some of the ways that you are.
You mentioned on your website that you struggled a little bit with coming to kind of terms with your diagnosis. Can you share a little bit about what that felt like for you, what that was like, what ultimately led you to kind of that acceptance? Obviously, there's a strong acceptance now, so much so that you were helping others. But what did that look like for you when you were trying to personally come to terms?
Yeah, absolutely. So when I first really realized that maybe something was going on and maybe that diagnosis that I'd gotten in college was a little more valid than I thought it was, when I had been married recently and just been married for a year to my amazing husband, who I've been with for 7 years now. And I was just going through a lot. It was really hard for me to take on the role of wife. And I started to think that maybe there was something going on. Maybe I did have a disability. So I pulled out that paperwork from college and read the diagnostic criteria. And I started reading about autism. And it just started to kind of dawn on me that I really resonate with so much that I'm reading about and so many people that have been through the same things, that, you know, maybe this is what it is. And so I went through that whole process of mourning that I talked about. And I had a little bit of a pity party for myself, and I mourned the loss of my neurotypical identity. And I went through that, and I came out the other side, and I discovered my passions and my interests, and or rediscovered, so to speak. And, you know, I set my mission to help others do the same, because you can have a life of purpose and meaning and value and do what you love and enjoy your life once you figure out what that is and what that means to you. And everyone's different. And also, I think it's so important to advocate for ourselves. And by speaking up and by speaking out, we are, you know, taking this veil of secrecy and silence away from neurodivergence. And it's so much more common than we're led to believe.
100%. I think that we are well underdiagnosed. And, you know, and I think people ask all the time too, well, why is it such a big thing now? I think it's just that we're speaking out about it more now. I think there was so much stigma around it for so long that we just didn't give it the space. And I almost have this feeling, it's my personal theory, that there's probably more neurodiverse individuals than there are neurotypical people. We just haven't all figured it out yet. Because I talk to people all the time who go, I don't know, I could be ADHD. And I ask them questions and I'm like, yeah, welcome to the club. I mean, and it's just because people haven't realized yet that they are neurodiverse, because we don't talk about it and we put so much stigma around it. Well, let me
ask you. Yeah, I'm just smiling because I've heard that before. Right? So, yes.
Well, let me ask you, if people wanted to work with you, what would be the best way for them to either reach out, contact you, learn more information about you?
Yeah, absolutely. So check out my website. It's michellemarkman.com. That's michellemarkman.com. Book a transformation call. It's totally free. It will change your life. And I highly recommend you reach out.
I love it. I love it. And now let me ask you, this is a question I like to ask all my guests when they come on. If you could give any advice to youth or young adults who are currently struggling academically, social, emotionally, what advice would you give to them?
I would say that nothing in life is permanent. So get through now, get through the next moment, get through today, get through tomorrow. Everything changes, and there is light at the end of the tunnel. There is peace and joy and happiness and ease on the other end. And you just have to give it time sometimes and have the right tools and the right supports in place.
I love that.
But things can improve and they should improve.
I love it. That is a great message. Well, Michelle, thank you so much for coming on the show today. I really do appreciate your time, your energy, your passion, and your openness today with my listeners.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure to be here.
Absolutely. And thank you so much to all of my listeners for tuning in. And I will see you next week on the Neurodiverse Teacher Podcast. The Neurodiverse Teacher Podcast is an Eccleston Education Consulting, LLC production.